the Common Criteria track. We're going to resume our talks. Our next presenter is Ian Holmes. He is a senior Common Criteria evaluator at Signacom Solutions, and Ian has an in-depth experience with a collaborative protection profiles. With his previous work experience included HSM and FIPS evaluations. He will be talking about selecting and maintaining cryptographic module for Common Criteria. Please welcome Ian.
Just trying to make sure I'm not too loud here. So the talk is definitely about selecting and maintaining a cryptographic module for, as Kirill mentioned, ISO 19790 and Common Criteria. Some of you have probably already been in that boat or otherwise. I'm shooting for a best practices approach in this, so if some of the things you do are different, understandable, not going to argue that point, just shooting for certain things. So, for myself, I work for Signacom Solutions. We have a FIPS lab in the McLean, Virginia area, which is not too far from here. Several of our colleagues in the FIPS side of things are actually here today. In the Common Criteria side of things, I actually work and live in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, as actually does Kirill. So our labs provide consultation services for pre-assessment work, or if you're thinking of doing these things, as far as doing a FIPS validation or Common Criteria effort. Signacom also has a professional services branch that does work with governments and such in this region. So, what I'm going to cover this morning, talk a bit about selecting a module or considering doing it yourself, pros and cons of each, combinations of modules that are possible. We'll look a bit at the entropy involved with this fun little topic. How you keep yourself up to date with the module or modules you choose, and maintaining disclosure. So a few assumptions to begin with. When I chose the word maintaining, it was to indicate this is not a one-off deal. Some vendors choose that they're going to do it once just for this one opportunity, do what they need to do to get over and done with, and that's it. In this category, you're going for a multi-year effort with something that you're going to incorporate into a product for the long haul. Collaborative protection profile of the past little while has been the network device one. I've done a lot of work with network switches in that regard, different flavors. You'll also probably be doing additional testing beyond FIPS and Common Criteria, UCR testing, StigFun. So it means that this is only a fraction of everything you're doing, potentially. Your organization will be investing quite a bit into this overall process then. You're going to be putting a lot of people into it. You've got your budget lined up with a lot of money thrown that way. So, in which case, for some of us, you're looking at this as going, FIPS, a drop in a bucket compared to the bigger budget that has to be done with people. Another thing to recognize here is the more complex you make how you use this module, you can anticipate greater scrutiny as a result from how it's going to be looked at, somewhat from the FIPS perspective and definitely from the CC perspective. As much as the NDCPP is very, thou shalt do it this way, there's still a question of, okay, you're doing all these crazy things, okay, let's figure out what's happening. So, starting off with module choices, there's the do-it-yourself side of thing on the left, where you choose, okay, I'm going to do it myself, I'm going to take things, I'm going to write all the code myself. And the more scientific approach, which yes, these are extremes I recognize, but you've got the person with the instructions, or following them. Obviously, if you go to the NIST website, you're going to see all the publications that explain how all of these work. You still have to code it, but at least you have an instruction set to work with. So, some pros and cons of DIY versus pre-existing. With the source code, you are the person who actually owns it, if you're going to do DIY. Part of that means you've got these algorithms, AES, potentially, not sure if you do triple Disney War, but SHA for certain, HMAC, all those things you're going to have to do yourself. If you go with the pre-existing module, they will provide you with some source code to work with in order to plug into things accordingly. So much of that legwork is taken care of. When bugs come up with it, which it will, people will be on the DIY side of things. You're considered the person, so your organization is considered the expert in this because you created it. Everyone's going to ask you, okay, what's your solution to it? The con there is the bug comes up, you need to do all of the groundwork yourself to resolve it, figure out exactly where it's happening, proceed from there. On the pre-existing side of things, if you've chosen somebody else's implementation, all you have to do in that case is go, okay, what is OpenSSL dealing with it? The folks from WolfSSL who are here, what are they doing? So the only con there is you have to wait till they provide you with a patch or an update, or hopefully a workaround, depending on the scale of what the issue is. And the last item, maintenance and updates. As the originator of our module, you're going to be looking at, or you need to be looking at, all issues that pop up security-wise and issue updates on a regular basis as required for your product. If it's a larger issue, you need to be proactive in checking on what's going on. So you want to be, security-wise, you'll need to be aware, okay, this has just popped up. We think it might be in this part of our code. We need to look there. And they, doing that before someone else comes up and goes, hey, you've got a problem. That aside. If you're one of the people using the organizations using a pre-existing module, you then will look to the originator for that. So combinations. There's the classic software, there's doing it all in hardware, but then there's a hybrid. So to be aware of with regards to hardware, that the CAVP aspect or ACVP, which is coming along now, if you're going to use crypto that's built into hardware into a chip, you need to be keep in mind the fact that whatever you're going to use, you want it to be around for years. So if you're going to make this investment, you want more than a couple of years out of that. Software, on the other hand, is much, much easier to update when the time comes. And there are combinations, definitely, where you're going to see software and hardware. And that comes along, you need to, when it comes to updates, isolating what needs to be updated between the two, or between the multi, and consider wrappers potentially. How many have dealt with hardware in the past? All right. Cheap or expensive to do updates? Laughter over there. Yes, been there. So if you work with hardware and you're going to do changes to it, it's not cheap to update, pure and simple. Not just the cost, the time it takes for the turnaround. So minimizing what's in the hardware is important. Don't neglect the fact that hardware is faster for certain computations. Love that part, but that's a fact. If you do DIY, you'll end up doing mostly software or software and a bit of hardware. If you're going to go with an already approved module, that'll usually mean software. But if you're in the category of I've already got a hybrid environment, then you've been through this before. Homemade cryptography versus published standards. It's pretty straightforward. Stick with the published implementations that NIST provides. Otherwise, you can expect lengthy discussions about how you've done what you've done. It can be significant rework if you lose the arguments with the folks who are responsible for that side of things. You're convinced it works. Someone says, no, I'm sorry, it's not acceptable. There. Another point to point out is the federal governments in Canada and the states, the military, DOD, D&D in Canada, large organizations are looking for that checkbox, which has been discussed many times in the past couple of days, that says FIPS validated crypto inside here. So as much as you might hear occasionally online someone saying, "Hi, I'm Johnny, I've got this really cool crypto that works way faster than AES." Sure it does. Okay, fine, for this instance, but does it do it great for everything else, and will it actually pass all the vetting you have to go through? Probably not. Next fun thing is entropy. I couldn't resist this part. I find it challenging myself personally, and I have to be honest and say that in my lab, the entropy guru is that guy sitting right there. So, however, it's not all, it used to be as simple as you could do a document that explained a few things. Now we expect a great deal more. Both CMVP and NIAP require it for you to do a lot more work with it as far as explain how it all works. Just as a CAVP talks about looking at the processor involved, with entropy, you need to look at the hardware being used for this. So, entropy means whatever platform you're going to use is tied into this. Collecting the actual raw data that's required for the analysis portion of this will take you time. I heard comments yesterday about someone complaining about it taking weeks to generate all this hard drive stuff. Yes, it does. Not going to argue. Not only that, but once you have the data, writing the entropy analysis report takes time in and of itself. That report will be read by the IAD group within NSA, who can take from weeks to months to process that and understand it. And fudging that data is a bad idea, even if it's an accident, because yes, they will quibble with you over the small, finer points. If you go the DIY approach, definitely expect to open up more of your code, because they are going to ask. And there is no get out of jail free card here. These are the people you have to satisfy, just so you're aware. So, this little example here I have is on the maintenance side of things, keeping up to date. Would you rather work with the nice fuzzy starfish from Finding Nemo, or tangle with that Portuguese man of war on the right that's pretty much guaranteed to kill you? No arguments there. CMVP and NIAP both expect that you're going to check cert advisories regularly. And I initially put down about the idea of knowing where all your code is set up to interact. You don't need to know that, but you need to know how to trace through all of your code and find out where it does touch. Do you have to have it all memorized in your head? No. But having a pretty good idea of where your developers have plugged in is important. By minimizing those points of interaction, as pointed out before, it makes it a lot easier for you to discover, does it affect you or not? If you've been through evaluations or validations, you will be asked this question. You get asked the question, okay, you've updated OpenSSL. Are you affected by this issue? No, we don't touch that. That's a really easy answer to have. So vetting cert advisors becomes more easily done. And that last line really refers to less of the technical side and more of the person from marketing going, "Oh my God, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, what's wrong?" And you're going, "Whoa, wait a second, no, it's not an issue." If they're a loud person, they'll have gone screaming to you and bugged other people as well. So calming them down is important. Another thing to look at is how many modules are involved. If you're not doing a simple approach where you've just got one cryptographic module involved, but several, I'm going to make look at this case that you're using one particular module, i.e. you've chosen to go with OpenSSL or WolfSSL, LibreSSL, or others. A thing to be aware of, and this comes back to the technical idea potentially, if you use one combination of module and library in one place, but you find out that your developers in the areas have been using other versions, that can be a headache. Because what happens if you, as I say, you've got 101D here, and you've got 1.0.2E over here, and an advisor comes out, and you have to figure out which one that affects accordingly, and make sure you correct that. It does happen. You are going to have developers do that. So you have to keep track of that part. An important thing to consider is get them all to one flavor only. That doesn't happen overnight. I've been there on the vendor side of things, seeing that happen, and recognize the fact it can take you a long time to roll that into a major release, because it's not as simple as I will take my 1.0.1D and go to the other flavor. Behaviors will change, so you have to keep that in mind. If you already have, and the last point here is, if you're in a hybrid situation where you've got your chip already in place with some libraries tied to it, plus or plus a cell, your security architect is always going to be busy checking for all of these things on a regular basis. So when it comes to updating your certification, you know, to date, you recognize the fact from the beginning you're not going to leave that your certified version frozen. You know you're going to change it over time. Keep in mind the fact that over time, the algorithms, the modes you use them in, the key sizes themselves will change. Everyone's been through the massive NIST transition that happened, seeing how certain things change. Well, that'll happen more so in the future, because NIST has researchers who will look to the future and decide, okay, AES-120 at some point will hit a point where it's just not strong enough anymore. We decided that at this date, this particular flavor, no more. You have to keep that in mind. Or wildcat scenario, a researcher comes along from the university and says, hey, I broke this. You have to react to that. The other part, being vigilant about changes that will touch on the source code for the module, be it in software or hardware, really hoping not hardware. You really don't want to be in a scenario where you're running the FIPS test harness with the guy from the FIPS lab or the gal from FIPS lab, and suddenly a test that's worked for years suddenly breaks. Yes, happens. This isn't the end of the world, but it is going to require you. You know at that point you're going to have to do a follow-on fix for it. And given the timing, you're likely going to end up with a mechanism or two that'll be non-certified for the effort you're currently in. That's just a reality part. And product management's going to go, how do we sell this one? That brings you to the FIPS test harness. Strong suggestion, minor releases aren't a big deal, but major revisions. How many do one major revision a year or so? Less. Audience question. How many of you go through one major revision of your software or firmware a year? Less than that? How often? Every year or so? Anybody else? 2 years? Okay. The point is, minor revisions aren't a big deal, but for major revisions, you should run the whole harness through. Sanity check to make sure nothing else comes up. If something does break, you can direct your developers to figure that out. The rotating of the developers is important. You don't want to have a single point of failure. And you also always want to have fresh eyes, and it's good experience for developers to go through this and understand it. So you're doing some work, and unfortunately, the Sally, who's been doing this forever, is really, really sick and can't touch it. then you're going to have to get Matt from wherever to kind of come in and take over it. That's just not good news. So that's important. CAVP testing. Yes, there will be failures. Does it mean that your code itself is actually broken? Not necessarily. This is where the seasoned developer comes in. You have them look at it carefully and go through, and this is where that having done run the testing beforehand, making sure it's okay. The NIST test tool for algorithms has been updated often in the past, and yes, it has mistakes in it. That's a reality piece. I've been to some through the scenarios where it's been, sorry, this is wrong. This is passed it back up through, had confirmation, and passed accordingly. It doesn't happen too often, but it does. As much as they're going with the automated approach, I would love to place a bet that their odds, that'll get updated in a similar fashion down the road. So, when to change things. Mechanisms, settings, key sizes. For your crypto module, or crypto modules, changing your FIPS mode settings at least 6 months prior to when this says they're no longer valid is a very good thing. Customers will complain about it, but you have an easy answer. You point to the standard and say, hey, we're doing this. On the hardware side of things, there are algorithms that exist. Obviously, there are some mechanisms that are present where you can break down the actual steps within it to minimize how much you have to pull away from the hardware itself. That's where I was mentioning wrappers before. It's a great thing to be able to go back and say, okay, I can do the basic HMAC piece, keep it there, and then wrap that accordingly. I remember one environment where a fellow had been developing wrappers around this one engine for years because he didn't want to touch the original certification. Software is obviously a quicker thing to update, but don't shortchange the QA cycles, because that's part of where you end up with the cycle of you try and do it faster, you break it, you're going to have to fix it, and depending on how much that becomes, egg on your face. When you do these changes, you need to plan the scope of the effort with your lab so they have time in their schedule to help you out. Consider the fact that there's dollars tied to this, and if you say at last minute, my gosh, we got to do this, and they've already got a full load, if they have to accommodate for you because of that, yes, the dollars talk, but the amount you have to pay will go up. So, disclosure. People used to say, don't tell them. How many folks here are American? Do you remember 20 years ago when you stopped being allowed to get Canadian beef by chance? The blurb at the beginning there. This all came about because through the discovery of a single isolated case of mad cow disease in one Alberta cow on May 20th. This is back in 2004. The farmer knew nothing about cattle ranching. Any self-respecting rancher would have shot it, shoveled it to bury it, and shut up about it. But the farmer didn't do that. The gentleman saying that was the premier of the province of Alberta in Canada. For those of you who have no clue where that is, consider it the Texas of Canada. Hopefully that'll help a little bit. The biggest producer of beef in Canada. Mad cow disease hit hard. By the time it was all said and done, Canadian exports were slammed on this. Doors were shut like crazy. Took years to recover. So Mr. I don't like this, why didn't you shut up? Sorry, it doesn't work that way. And in this case, at least we could tell him he was an idiot and didn't get sued for it, because we're in Canada, we don't sue so much. That's back then. More recently, Starbucks, April 2015, sends a system-wide update down the chain. Shuts down all their tills in 60% of the stores. They couldn't operate. So if you can't take in orders or take payments, obviously you can't open. Starbucks refused to give details. Simple fact, a point of sale terminal is a network computer that runs customized software. No surprise. I don't know how U.S. Postal Service does it, but I have been to a Canada Post facility where they test this stuff up the wazoo. Remember, this was, oh good heavens, 10 years ago plus. I was in there for a few months doing some work, and they had this test lab full of all these computers just for this purpose, so they could push updates down once a day and make sure everything behaved properly. So bottom line is hiding an issue is not an option. But you need to be strategic in how you're going to admit to it, fess up, and you have to have a good message for your customers. So the situation, if it hasn't happened, it will happen someday. Murphy's Law here. An issue comes up with your product, it will affect your customer base, and you know it's tied to your crypto module. Step number one, figure out exactly what has happened, exactly. If it comes down to looking in the source code, finding that one stupid bit or flag, you figure it out. No waffling, you've got to have that figured out. Figure out a solution and test it wherever, in all the possible scenarios that it could affect things. If it's really simple, great, but if you peel the layers down and you go, oh nuts, it's further down, figure out how far it's going to go across. The time you spend doing that will make things a lot easier for you. Once you have that figured out, the lab that certified your module will be your best friend at this point. Get their advice on how to deal with this CMBP. Get them to test it and prove that it worked, and run a few tests accordingly. Then get the ball rolling with CMBP at the very least to do that. Full disclosure, you want to tell them where the problem is, what the issue is, here's how we addressed it. Customer-facing side of things, you will need to let your customers know, but obviously they're going to have different levels of knowledge in the people who are working with your technology. So you need to tailor the message accordingly. What the sysadmin needs to know versus customer support versus the marketing sales guy, very different messages. Presumably, do most of you have websites for people to connect to get information for support purposes? A few nods, good. That website is obvious, is your point of contact to get people pulling information down on the patch required and instructions for how to deal with it. The good news side of this, apart from the fact you're going to have happy customers knowing you've dealt with this is in common criteria, there's a flaw remediation option that requires this, and ISO 19790 looks favorably on it as well. Being proactive with disclosure will be appreciated by everybody. CMVP will definitely work with you because you'll have all the facts. And your reputation as a company will be preserved knowing you didn't try to shove it under the floor, under the carpet. Okay. Have to admit, go the faster thought. So in this presentation, we explored selecting a module, or finding that doing it yourself, combinations of modules that are possible, dealing with entropy, keeping up to date on all the various facets involved, and maintaining disclosure to customers and such on anything regarding your product for security. Are there any questions? Confusion? Counterarguments?
We have a short break until our next presentation.